This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition, North Dakota Tourism, Onyx Hunt, the number one GPS hunting map app, Onyx, know where you stand, and by Chief Upland. Push further and hunt longer with a game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit. Scott Franzen joins the show today to help me share some exciting news. A new season of the Flush television show is about to hit the Outdoor Channel airwaves. Plus, we've got a new bird dog on our team. She's wrestling with mine as we speak under my legs. And we'll talk about Father's Day gift ideas for the upland bird hunters, keeping your dog in shape during the summer heat, and maybe even add a few game bird recipes to your wild game kitchen. Easy, Daisy. Easy. Can we do this? Is this going to work?
This is going to be hilarious. Okay. Watch your cord.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton is our producer. And Scott Franzen is the man that pays our bills. That's why Brandon and I are kissing up to him today, and we invited him on the show. Scott, welcome back. We're a little distracted here. In the room is my dog, Daisy, and a new addition to the team.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason you invited me, Travis, is you were scraping the barrel for guests and you wanted to see my puppy.
It's kind of correct, yes. But either way, you're here, so let's do this. We have two dogs running laps in our in this room right now. So if you hear a bunch of noise, just like that. Yep. Easy. It's a one-year-old, and then how old is Millie?
Millie is 11-week-old black lab.
Congratulations. She's a beautiful dog. Mine loves her, obviously. Yeah. They're going to tire each other out here, hopefully shortly. We apologize for any of this noise if we break anything. I don't think we're going to break anything. Is there anything we can break in here?
If there's a long silence, it's because we had to do a puppy potty break.
Okay. Well, congratulations on... Oh, nope. She just did one right here.
Oh, God.
Cut. A timeout. All right. And we're back, just like that. There's a new spot that all the dogs in our office will now visit.
Oh, God, yeah.
How many do we have as a company? How many dogs are... You've got two.
I've got two. I bet we're over 20.
Over 20 dogs as a production team?
Let me do quick math. You fill in the dead air space here. Let me do some quick math. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I don't know what he's adding in his head, Brandon.
No, it's probably closer to 12 or 14 dogs, yeah.
That sounds good. Most of them hunting dogs, some of them not. Well, it's about half and half.
Yeah, I would say most are hunting dogs.
Yeah. Well, what's the story on Millie?
Well, Millie is, this is Hank's daughter. And I was, a love connection was made through my veterinarian.
Sure.
There we go.
You are distracted.
Yeah. And a friend of his had a black lab female who'd done a lot of field trial work, well decorated. And we connected last year about this time, is during COVID. And she came into heat late, but sometime in January. And the dogs did an artificial insemination. And then in March, she had six puppies, but one died.
Hmm. So why did you go artificial insemination?
Well, that wasn't my choice. Okay. It was the breeder's choice, and I think because she was a 5-year-old female, and I think he just wanted to make sure everything took okay, you know. And it was interesting because Hank would go to the fertility vet and
open up the magazine.
Yep. Come out with a cigarette, and you know, 10 minutes later, we're back home.
I just don't even know how that process goes. Were you just let him go in the room. I suppose he couldn't go in there anyway.
No, he couldn't go in there anyways. Yeah. They'd come up and pick him up at the car, and then he'd go in, and he was not gone very long, and then he'd come back, and we'd go home. It was kind of unique and strange at the same time, but Millie's a lovely little black lab. She, I think she'll be around 50 pounds. Okay. Her mom's a pointing black lab, and I think it'll be a really nice combination.
She's currently best friends with Daisy. It sounds vicious right now, everybody, but I assure you, these are two puppies playing that are rolling around, loving on each other.
Going off the top turnbuckle.
Yes, yes. Oh my goodness. All right. If we break again, it's because they've been put in their own corners. But hey, enough of that. So is there anything different about this puppy than dogs that you've had in the past? First of all, how many dogs have you had now? Do you know?
Millie will be my seventh, I think. And they've all been labs, except my first dog was a golden retriever. She's the first black lab I've had. I haven't noticed any differences yet, other than, man, they're cute. You know, the little black lab puppies are all puppies are cute. All puppies are cute. It doesn't matter if it's a hunting breed or not. But those eyes through the black lab and stuff are really neat. Really neat. But that's the main difference. I've had all my dogs except maybe the first one. I've got taken them home at 7 weeks. And Millie says hi, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're on the show.
And I would say she's learning like all the other dogs. I kind of do this hybrid training model of an old school guy named Richard Walter. And she's almost 12 weeks, and she's kind of, when she's not totally distracted, whistle trained now. And she comes well and stays pretty well and sits to the whistle, things like that. So, you know, she's making progress. It helps having another dog to train with.
Right. Well, how does Hank put up with her?
Oh, Hank loves her. I mean, Hank is still half puppy himself. So they play a ton. He gets really bummed out when I take her out to train alone. It gives me the sad eyes and it breaks my heart. And then I do some together because she needs the distraction. Oops, Brandon's briefcase just fell on Millie.
it's a yard sale in this office right now.
But it's good. I like having an older dog with a pup to train with, especially when it comes to hunting. I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to, you know, down the road. I mean, I've definitely learned a lot in the last, you know, 8 months with this puppy here, but adding to that, kind of like you've done and other people. When you first started with your first dog, when you're like, I'm going to get serious about training here, you mentioned it already, but you went kind of with an old school training method. But why did you go that route?
Well, because it was my second dog. Because my first dog was a wonderful dog and a good hunter. He just was not trained very well. And I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast. I got sick of coming out of the pheasant fields horse from yelling at him. And I said, I'm not going to do that anymore. And a friend of mine suggested this book. It's called Game Dog. And it's they've updated some of the pictures and things like that more recently. But it's a really nuts and bolts training method that's easy. I mean, I work with Millie 2-3 times a day in 20-minute sessions. And you start when they're puppies. And there's, you know, a lot of first, let me say, I'm going to qualify this. I am not a trainer. Mm-hmm. This is just what I do with my family dogs. And everybody has different points of view on this, and they're all good, I think. So, but just once she kind of learns her name is when I gradually start doing things with her, and it's all positive reinforcement, a little bit of treat training now, and it's fun. And it's fun for me too. You're out there doing stuff with them, and you can see the steady progress. And they don't even know it yet. they don't know why they're doing it. They just kind of do it.
Yeah. Do you think that that training method is really focused towards a retriever?
Yes, definitely it is. And that's all I've ever had. And this is meant to be a multi-species hunting retriever, so that. Your dog can waterfowl hunt, and it can upland hunt and things like that. Their philosophy for retrievers on the upland side is, and this is why I did it so long ago, is keep the dog under control. The natural flushing instincts and nose, they're there.
Mom and dad
gave them that. And so my job is to make sure they respond to the whistle if they're out too far, or a voice command, whatever that may be, and that they hunt with you and not in the next county.
What do you think, this is several dogs into your training now. Why do you feel like it's so important for you to train your dogs versus sending them to a dog trainer? Because you've had a little bit of experience working with other dog trainers too, right?
Or No, I haven't.
Okay.
No, I've always, for me, I like the connection I build with my dog.
Yeah.
And I think I've said this in an episode. I enjoy sharing the success with them. I think when they put up that first bird and you shoot it and bring it back, that there's a moment there. It sounds bizarre, but I think it helps me feel connected to them more. And I think that connection helps them hunt with me earlier and do more things that I may ask them to do. I know there's a lot of guys that may not have time or feel they don't have time to train their dogs and send them out, and they have that a great connection too. There's no right or wrong way to do it. It's just my preference.
Yeah.
And I like that. And so with her, what I may do is, I've never done this before, but if she takes to the training and does well, I may try and do some competitions with her, some hunt competitions and things like that. I've never tried that.
Yeah, we've talked the last several weeks about dogs and puppies, and nope, she's doing good. She's okay.
All right.
She's okay. They've just tired each other out.
Good.
You've talked about just this different stage of life that you're in, and
yeah,
you have some new plans and dog related plans too, being that you're kind of an empty nester and you've got more time on your hands than you've ever had before. So
You keep me busy, Travis.
You keep me very busy. I am not leaving you, so you and I are still connected. But I think you mentioned doing some breeding, perhaps.
I may breed her. She doesn't know if she wants to do that or
she's
not.
She's not interested in that.
She's looking at a statue in the case and barking at it.
There's a duck in the case. Or is it a pheasant?
It's a dog. It's a stuffed dog thing.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
A wood dog. When you go through your life stages and you're going through this now, your kids get very active, and that becomes so much of your life, social life, everything, whether it's the outdoors, sports, the arts, or things like that. And now that my daughters are moving on to their next phase of life, that would be, I enjoy a little bit of, kind of friendly competition. Mm-hmm. And so I think that could be fun with her.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do that.
She agrees.
She says yes. I want to do
agrees.
It too.
She agrees. What do you think you've learned most about training dogs and then about yourself in the process?
Consistency is key. And making sure if you're in a family that you have a shared language for the dog, that you're not as the main trainer, let's say, and that I'm asking when I say sit, that they're not saying, oh, lay down. It's the
right.
same language
yep.
for everything. And that I'm very, at times, especially at this age, insecure with my training, meaning
you are.
Yeah. Because, it's when you have the other part of it, when you have a dog that like Hank, that responds so well to what you're doing, then your puppy's still going in and out of those things. It makes you think, did I do something different with Millie than I did with Hank? It's not totally insecure, but I always go, ooh. Or what was Hank doing at the same age? I don't write those things down. I did once, and then I never kept it. And so you're constantly comparing. But with her, and I know this is true with all my dogs, especially at this age, they will do things, and then you go, "Oh yeah, it's." I remember this, and it's working, and she's responding, and it's. So then that insecurity goes away. But every once in a while I go, oh my gosh, did I screw the dog up? Did I do something wrong? You know?
Oh, gosh.
Say hi, Millie.
What a cute puppy. So what does your summer look like with your dogs? How do you keep in shape yourself and the dogs?
Well, look at me. I mean, I'm basically an Adonis.
If I'm kissing up to you, I was just, you're looking great.
Oh, I am with my, in this, especially now, it is really hot.
Yeah.
Unseasonably hot. I get them in the water as much as I can and do a lot. Millie had her first water retrieves last night, which was kind of fun.
Big time.
I tried to video it and failed miserably. But hopefully one of the kids will go out with me and hold the camera. And that's what we do. Water. And then a lot of early morning stuff. I work her before I come to work. Eight.
I was going to talk to you about your timing.
I know.
You've been coming in a little bit late lately.
Try and get her work in the morning, then about 9 o'clock. And just, you know, at short sets, short little sets. And then when it cools down, we'll do longer things and you know, let Hank run more. I mean, Hank would literally run till he passed out. So we just do short little walks with Hank and then a lot of swimming. He loves to swim.
I'm amazed at this white rocket here too. I mean, she
would do the same.
She does the same thing. Yeah. And she's, you know, I watched her progress in her water retrieves. And I mean, I feel like she's a lab sometimes, you know, here's this pointer, but yet she wants to be in the water and retrieve, and she's launching. I don't know what she would tape at, but I feel like with her speed, when she leaves the dock,
oh yeah,
I mean, she flies out there. And the other day, chasing this tennis ball a million times, the tennis ball finally sank on her. And so she swam for about 30 to 35 minutes trying to find it, dunking her head under to see it, because I'd say, find it. And I could see it right under, right? It was only 2.5, 3 feet deep, just, you know, a little too deep for her to touch, but I could see the ball sitting there. And
did she go get it?
No, she ended up not getting it. So I will be out there retrieving it. I didn't have my swim trunks, but it was at a friend's place, and that ball is still there. Anyway, just how much energy she spent in a cool atmosphere made me feel good about it, because when she came home, she was just...
Isn't that amazing? They're like kids that way in the water. They swim, and then they come home, and they go to sleep. Yep. Millie last night, she normally gets up once in the night to go out, and last night slept through the night because she was swimming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yes.
Nice. So you found your recipe.
I found my recipe.
Is it a pointer breed thing, or is it all dogs? But I feel like I know a lot of hunters that have pointer breeds where their dogs, when they pass out after a good day, their positions are just ridiculous. Like legs all over in the air and instead of curled up.
They do that. Hank and Millie both lay on their backs, legs straight out.
Straight up.
Yep. Like they're asking for a belly rub.
Right. Yes. Yes. And she ends in the most awkward moments. I could create her own Instagram page with all the different awkward dog photos you could come up with. So maybe somebody could do that.
Yeah. Well, I know somebody.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one other thing I learned with the black lab puppy that I didn't learn or have to watch quite as much with the yellows is that coat soaks up the sun, and she gets hot faster than Hank does because of the black coat. And so we monitor that a little bit. She can't, you know, she can't be out there high sun, high heat all day. She needs some shade because it really sucks in the sun and the warmth.
Yeah. I mean, most people that have dogs know this, but it's a good reminder that this time of the year, the heat it has to be factored into what you're doing. If your dogs are in the crate, is there airflow in the back?
Yep.
You know,
even in the car, if you leave your crate in the car and then go back in, especially
when they come back in wet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have some other exciting news, Scott, that we're going to get to here. But first, a message from Chief Upland. For generations, bird hunters have hit the fields carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their backs. Sometimes the vest rips, tears, and falls apart. Other times, they're downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you can decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Last fall, I tested a Chief Upland vest for the first time, and I simply love it. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch, and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. You've all probably seen those hunters in the field carrying birds in their pouches that hit the back of their legs when they walk. That doesn't happen with Chief Upland vests. They ride high in your back, and that's a big deal because it doesn't tire you out, even with a pouch that's full of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is waterproof, breathable, and designed to withstand the world's toughest environments. How can you trust that? Well, it's the same fabric used in tactical military gear. I can say that my Chief Upland vest is one of the nicest hunting vests that I've ever worn. Push further and hunt longer with the game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit. Well, we are in one part of our production house recording this podcast, and as we speak, editors are working in another room, other rooms, putting the final pieces together for our new season of The Flush that will start airing in just a few days. So, Scott, you're obviously a big part of this production. And is there excitement on your end to get another season out the door?
Definitely. I think, and we've talked about this, I think this might be one of our best ever. Yeah. Because of the factors that were in our face last year with the pandemic, we got creative and we just hunted hard in a lot of species of birds. And it was a we've talked about this before. It was a phenomenal year bird wise too, which always helps. Yeah.
Numbers were really solid. I think we didn't expand the places that we wanted to go. We centralized a little bit for our travel schedule. We camped.
We were efficient.
Efficiently. Yeah. Yep. We didn't interact with a lot of people, but fortunately in bird country, you can easily social distance.
Yeah. And many of the shows have Daisy in them. It's your first hunting dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a life experience. That's a hunting life experience.
I'm going to look like such an ass. Scott,
that's impossible for you, Travis.
No, I'm serious. Part of me, you know, I watch back some of that season last year and the progression of that puppy throughout the season from where she started to where she ended to where she is today. I'm excited for this coming season because of Daisy's progression. But the fact that we lost her multiple times on her first hunt, which I've talked about on this podcast several times, and that's going to air on national television. So,
but that's what people go through in the field with their first dog. Yeah. And that's we're showing that as it happened. Yeah. This isn't staged. This is real life stuff out there.
You and I are very similar hunters because we love the real hunt.
Yeah.
We love hunting public lands.
Chase them where they are.
Yes, exactly. And neither one of us are afraid to really show what happens out there. That's why I'm not going to take out. The one thing I will say, though, unfortunately, is that the camera didn't capture Daisy stuck down in the bottom of the canyon because I had to go like over a mile and Aaron wasn't there when I finally found her. So I don't have footage of her, of me lifting her out of this 6 foot deep crack.
That had to be so scary. It had to be unbelievable.
It was because the GPS said she didn't move for like 20, 25 minutes in this location. I'm standing there in the bottom of this canyon and it says she's here and she's not. And it's only because I saw this little crack slicing through the earth that I happened, and actually one of George Lyle's dogs went on point right there and was like, hey, come look over here. It's like he was pointing Daisy down.
Could you get in the crack?
Not quite. I had to just lay on my belly and then lift her up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so until I was right above it, you couldn't even see it because the weeds were, or the grass in the bottom there was probably 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
So it hid that little slice through earth, and that's where she was. So we get a shot of us walking back up the hill, which happens to be a beautiful sunset shot, the way that the camera was facing, and you don't get to see me just
shaking your head.
The words I said, Scott.
The thought bubble over your head.
So this is what, when we get back, finally get back to the guys on top of the bluff, and I said, I have interviewed I don't know how many hunters, and everyone says, it's all about the dogs. It's always, I just do this for the dogs. And I think my words were, F you guys in here, it's all about the dogs. And I don't swear very often, but this...
But then you experienced the... It's all about the dogs later in the season as she evolved. And, you know, that's... I love that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we got that. And we got, you know, stories with other hunters and their dogs. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, how many species did we have last year? Well, I had... three on that, or well, we chased four in that Wyoming hunt alone.
Yep, you went for the Upland Slam in Wyoming.
Yep,
that's a beautiful episode. The scenery, the birds,
that'll be fun. Yep. Yeah, that is fun.
Well, actually, the first show of the season is a little bit different than what you and I are used to producing, which is kind of that adventure style. I joined Sam Daly and four veterans that, I don't want to talk too much about it. I just want to let it speak for itself. But they shared their real life stories serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And
it's going to be a fabulous episode.
Through unbelievable production, we were able to bring their stories back to life. And Sam trained dogs to lead soldiers on the front lines over there. And he had incredible footage from when he was there. Of dogs sniffing explosives going off, things like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he shared that with us. So we brought his story back to life. And now what he's doing today, it's just, it centers around a pheasant hunt that we went with them in South Dakota. But the story is so much deeper.
And is that our first episode of the season?
It's our first show of the season. So I'll share with you, with everyone, our episodes are going to start June 28th. That's the first season or the first week of the new season. And they're going to run all the way through the end of December. So we've got 6 months of television coming up, 26 weeks. And how the network does this is they air 13 weeks in a row of our new episodes, and then they re-air those same 13 weeks. So that's how you get 6 months of television. The air times for this season are going to be Mondays at 10:30 a.m., Wednesdays at 6:30 a.m., Fridays at 5:30 p.m., and Saturday mornings at 8:30 a.m. All of those times are Eastern on the Outdoor Channel. And then, as always, once our full season has run its course on the network, we will stream those episodes in their entirety because we've seen the television world kind of evolve a little bit, and mm-hmm. the streaming options are available, Amazon and our YouTube channel. But, so we've got a centralized season in Midwest heavy, but really, Montana, Wyoming, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska... Did we do Kansas?
We did not do Kansas this year. This is the first time in many years we haven't done Kansas.
Okay, a variety of birds. You and I both spent some time in North Dakota because we both love that place. But anything stand out to you that we haven't already talked about with North Dakota?
Oh, I think we did talk about just the incredible bird numbers. Mm-hmm. I think... if they get some moisture this year, and I think they've been getting some recently, it could be very similar this year.
Could be better, actually, because they didn't have a winter.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be better.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that would be the main thing, is just the bird numbers. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting fall in that it snowed after about the second week of the season again, mm-hmm. and then that changed conditions for late season hunts real quick. Mm-hmm. But that would be the main thing, I think.
I think for me, it was, I took that Ice Castle fish house with me all over the country last year. But being out in the field changes things a little bit. I personally love the adventure side of a hunt and then being able to add the food.
Yes.
So we tried different recipes. I remember specifically in the Badlands, we grabbed some of the berries off of the bushes that we shot the grouse in, and we made some like a berry sauce that went with it, and just really...
lived off the land.
Living off the land. And I was just talking to Kyle, one of our videographers and editors, and he's working on one of the prairie hunts that we did, that he's like, I was reliving that again. So we were just talking about this an hour ago. He goes, I was reliving it again, and the food looks just as good as I remember it tasting when he's putting this recipe together. So we've got a few recipes this year of things that we tried. I always like when I'm hunting with somebody new, beforehand we talk about, you know, our plans, but I say, bring an idea of some ingredients of things that you might want to try, and we'll cook them up. See what it tastes like. If it's good, we can share it. Yep. And so I think we've got three of those from camping, but it's hard to balance the amount of birds that we saw and the other stories and fit everything in sometimes.
It is. Yeah. It is. We might have to do some short edits on some of those things and put them up on the YouTube channel. I think that'd be, you know, some of the cooking things if we didn't make the story or some of the other things, because it was a good year.
Yeah.
We got a lot of content.
Yep. Yeah. And it closes out with probably the birdiest hunt that I've ever been on in South Dakota at the end of the season. We did that special auction online with Pheasants Forever last year to help raise money during COVID, and people could bid to come on this hunt, and they set it up to hunt with different PF biologists throughout South Dakota, and it was that road trip.
That's right.
And they contacted people in their regions to see if they would allow us to come out and showcase the work that they've done on their properties. All wild birds, but yeah, I mean, Daisy had 500 points or something.
I was going to say,
ridiculous.
That's when she really reached her potential.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the first day we walked for 6 hours and we saw 1,000 birds, and I'm not exaggerating that.
My gosh.
I mean, and it was just amazing bird numbers out there. So we have a lot of variety of birds, a lot of birds. I don't know how to state this. It's a birdie season. It's a very birdie season. And we're just, I guess, it feels good to know that it's coming back, right?
It does.
And we're feeling like hunting season is going to be here shortly too.
And it was good to see a lot of hunters out in the field. There wasn't a lot else to do last year.
Right.
So I think there were a lot of people reconnecting with their hunting roots and then new hunters out there. And we need both. Mm-hmm. You know, we need them. We need people out there enjoying the land you know, hopefully supporting Pheasants Forever, but some at least supporting these communities in these small areas. I know my experience was everyone really appreciated seeing faces out there, you know, and socially distanced faces,
sure.
Of course.
Yep. Well, that all of those seasons, or not seasons, I'm not making sense right now. I'm distracted by the dogs. But all of those episodes will be coming at you very soon. So we hope you enjoy it. Consider this an invite to share with us if there are certain episodes you really like, you want to see more of. We aim to please.
We sure do.
So feedback is always great, and I get a lot of it. Scott, I share some of it with you, only part of it, because I want you to keep working. But just to know what you want to see us go out and hunt. And I continue to hear this again and again. They love the adventure side of it, the public lands, the wild birds. And that's really where our heart is at too. So it works out well. I've got some exciting hunts that I'm lined up that I got to talk to you about your checkbook about after this.
Well, maybe I'll just have to go on those with you.
Okay. It sounds good.
I want to echo what you said though, and thank people for their comments, because that is invaluable to us. To make sure that we're delivering what people want to see. We think we know, but it's always good to be reaffirmed or get reaffirming emails or new ideas on things as well.
Yeah. And if you think you've got a great idea for an episode that you could host us, I mean, we hunt with regular hunters all over the country all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. And it makes for real TV. And that's what we aim to do. All right. Let's switch gears a little bit, because it's a big holiday that you and I get to celebrate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Christmas?
Yeah. It's kind of like Christmas, but just for us, just for the dads. It's Father's Day coming up. So how about we throw out a handful of ideas? I'm going to start by doing this. If your wife or your girls could get you anything for Father's Day, what would you want?
New shotguns out of the question.
Why?
Because I like my guns as they are. And that's, even though I'm worth it, that might be a little bit too much. So you queued me up. We might talk about this. So I have a couple of ideas.
Okay.
Walton's is a partner of ours, but I don't say this because they are partner ours. They have a terrific spice pack that I use all the time when I'm grilling, and not just for with wild game. I use it on my steaks, my chickens, my chicken, pork, hamburgers, everything, and I love it. Mm-hmm. And if you are a griller and you like to grill, that is a great idea for your spouse, partner, kids, for something like that. Did I steal one of your ideas? Sorry if I did.
I made probably six ideas here of things on my wish list, and I was hoping maybe you would take that as a hint.
Okay.
Well, no, but I did. So, yeah, you're right. They actually have a – I think I made a note here. Let me look. They have a seasoning kit they put together called the PF and QF – or yeah, the Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, Walton's seasoning set. So it's a shaker gift pack. There's three different spices in it.
Yeah. In
it has roasted ringneck, bold barbecue, quail, and the ultimate steak and roast rub seasonings. So to add to what you are saying there, I love that idea. And the ultimate steak and roast rub is
phenomenal.
It is. I've been using that for a couple of years, and I've gotten it for gifts for my brother-in-law. Yeah. And he comes over and he'll I see him snooping a little bit, like, hey, you got any more?
Where is it?
Yeah. He goes, hey, last time he was over for dinner, we have family dinners on Sunday night where their family comes over and we switch anyway. He's like, hey, you got any more of that ultimate roast?
Well, and I use that on potatoes.
Yes.
And I use it on eggs, and it's just a great all around spice beyond just meat. So and I think if you get it from their website, it's not super expensive.
$14.99. I looked it up today because I wanted to throw out some ideas there. So that's a kind of a low end cost, you know, like anybody may want to get it for your dad or another dad that you hunt with that might like it, or pass this on to your
to those shopping for you, maybe.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so what's one of yours, Travis? Give me one of your list now. We'll go back and forth.
Okay. We'll start with an easy one here. The easy one, I think, for any dad would be a membership to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever.
That's a great idea.
You know, it's $35.
Dang,
bucks.
I wish I would have had that one.
Yeah. Brandon, keep track. I'm up one. Yep. Okay. I got one there. I think that, you know, if you want to get one for your dad, it comes with the membership you get. There's different incentives out there all the time. If you go to their website, you can find out. You might get a tumbler. You might get a jacket. I don't know what they've got for promotions, but you do get the magazine quarterly, and you can read what I have to say. I'm in there most of the time, and it's going to be just
those are
amazing.
short stories.
It's going to be amazing content, but you really can learn what the Habitat organization is up to, and it's a great
that's working
investment.
On your behalf.
It is, yeah. And we've said this before when we've had them on the show, but when you're paying for that membership, it's an investment that they put into the ground. It's like 99 cents on the dollar goes right back into the ground. And once it goes into the ground, it's there forever.
Yep.
And so that's a beautiful investment right there.
Great idea, Travis.
Yep. I get 2 points for that, Brandon.
All right. So my turn. Okay. So many people listening to this are probably have a dog, want a dog, are dog people. Any dog-related supplies. So I wrote down training dummies, curry combs if you have a long-haired dog that tend to burr up in the fall, and a good one. And I know there are some prepackaged packs out there for this. If not, we should create a list and we can put on the website is a doggy first aid kit that if you don't have one, you bring out in the field for removing porcupine quills,
right.
Cuts, you know, elementary cut treatment, skunk mixture.
Yep.
Those work on hunters that have been in the field camping too long, too.
Yeah.
I believe it or not, Ron used to make a kit like that was sold locally in Minnesota that I still have. I got it for Christmas with my first dog, Butch, and I've just kept it and added to it as I go, and I bring it on every trip now.
Yeah.
Ron's with me on every trip now.
You can't get rid of Ron, no matter what you do. Yeah. It's a great gift idea because I was given that gift when I got my puppy.
Yep.
George had a kit when I brought Daisy out to visit him. George Lyle had a kit. He goes, here, buddy. And that beautiful leather collar that she wears. And then he had a first aid kit. And I have that with me everywhere I go. It's in my truck all the time. Because
it's peace of mind, too.
It is, yeah. I mean, I can staple her up if I need to. I've learned a lot of first aid kits. She's running a million miles an hour. I've already used it several times. Mm-hmm. EMT gel.
Oh, that's huge.
Huge, yep. Huge. Yeah, so a first aid kit, all right, he gets, give him a point, Brandon.
And what I would add is, as you are with other people with dogs, ask them if they have something that is killer that they put in your first aid kit that you may not know about. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot. It's like, oh, I see you have a first aid kit. Can you tell me what's in there? And I've added some things. EMT gel is one that I added in a long time ago and someone told me about, and it's phenomenal.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's go big. If you really, really want to impress the father in your life, I have, about a year ago, I got one of those pellet grills from Camp Chef.
Oh, that's a good one.
And it is incredible. So you can, I've got the Woodwind Wi-Fi grill, so I'm constantly smoking stuff. I'm grilling on
I've
it.
Said you've been smoking stuff a long time, Travis.
Yeah. So my grill, it does have the Sidekick, and I've got the cast iron flat pan, as well as the option to put the propane accessory on the side to just regular grill and not use the pellets.
That's so nice.
But it is such a great grill. I mean, I absolutely love it. It is more of an investment. It's a big gift, but I figure if we're going to go big, we'll go big. And that item you can also find on the Walton's website because they now sell Camp Chef products.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I would say too, camping last fall, I did get one of their, and I forget the name of it, but having a setup that you can take out into the field was phenomenal. So there's a smaller investment. You're looking at like $130 or $170 for one of their field grills.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice setup there. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I want to go hunting with you if you're going to make breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Travis.
And I make.
Brandon, are you in?
I've got all my family recipes of sausage that we make. Oh. And so I bring. Yeah. Kyle is like, sign me up. When I said I want to do another, at least one more of those camping, he goes, I'm in.
I want to go. I'm in.
All right. You're up.
Okay. So this one is also maybe $100 to $120 type of item. But if you don't have one, ask for it, a vacuum sealer. For your game, for sure. But it's you use it for so many other items in the household. If you buy poundage of meat. Like if you shop at Costco, it's perfect. But anything that you can divide and freeze and seal, it just keeps it forever. And my wife uses it for other soups or things like that. So it's a multi person gift potentially as well. But there's nothing better for your game.
Right. Right. Yep. Absolutely agree. 100%. And as long as we keep throwing Waltons out there, they sell a variety of them.
They do. Yep. Yes.
They have their own.
This is not a Walton's.
This is not a Walton's deal. But
for hunters,
they have everything that you would need for food related items. And obviously, the other half of the hunt is about the food. So it's important.
I got a vacuum sealer for Father's Day once and I was ecstatic. So that's why I thought of that one.
Good call. Good call. I feel like it makes sense to throw Chief Upland Vest in there because obviously they support us. I absolutely loved getting that vest last year and using it out in the field. I think anybody that spends any amount of time out in the field, either training this time of the year or during hunting season, wants to have a good vest. So highly recommend it. Their over-under vest retails for just shy of $200. They also have the, if somebody has that vest already, they have all those other individual attachments that you could add or the water bladder or things like that. So you could pimp your vest really easily. Pimp your vest, Scott.
So let me, I'm going to ask you a question that I know the answer to, but there's some people who may say, well, why, what's the big deal on a vest? Why, what's the difference between one that I might spend $200 with and one that I might spend $40 or $50 with?
Yeah, I think really it's the comfort. Most people that spend a lot of time in the field and are successful, they realize quickly that if you've got two or three birds hanging in your back, you don't want it sagging you down because it really just, if you're miles in and you're uncomfortable with carrying your gear, plus if you've got a vest that doesn't have pouches or space for you to put your the things you think you need. And we just talked about the first aid kit stuff.
Yep.
I carry a lot of those tools in. A lot of people that I hunt with, they've got a lot of tools at the ready. You'll see in this season of shows, we needed it more than one time. You're talking porcupines. We ran into we got hit by a rattlesnake on one. Oh, one of the dogs got hit. And so you got to be ready. And if you don't have that stuff with you, you're going to regret it.
You're playing with danger.
You could be. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to ever think that way.
Yeah.
But you hunt long enough, you're going to come into those times where you're going to wish you had a pliers or some tools that you could use to help your dog or somebody else's dog in the field. So it's a little bit of an investment, but I think when you add up the dollars that you spend in your dog, your guns, the fuel to get where you're going, lodging, food, all that other stuff, you want to make sure that you're enjoying your time out there. So I don't know. Maybe someday we'll do a product review on different vests because I've worn so many of them now.
And that weight distribution is what I was getting at. Because when you are carrying multiple birds in your shells, in water, anything else, and having that pressure right on your traps there versus having it distributed through your shoulders, it's such a big difference in how you feel at the end of the day.
Right. And I think there are some hunters out there that, you know, they get out a couple times of the year and they post a lot. They're not carrying the birds. And therefore, the vest might not be as big of an investment for
100%.
Them. But anybody that really hunts long enough to know that they're mad at their vest at the end of the day, or they're wet, or, you know, their shells are wet, their phone goes everywhere now. You've got your attachments, waterproof attachments for all of your stuff. I think there's a few vests out there that do a good job of protecting it. And from what I've experienced, you know, on my hunt so far, the Chief Upland vest has done all
of
that.
And that's a good point. If you come out of the field feeling a certain way or upset, then you know maybe it's time for it to look at a different option.
Yep. And I'm not concerned that I'm going to rip something. I've seen some of the mesh on some of the other vests get ripped. You got a bird hanging. I've seen, you know, upset hunters at the end of the hunt because they're like, a stupid vest, and, you know, and I'm carrying their bird for them or something like that.
Same. Yeah.
So nobody wants that. Is it my turn again? I think
it's your turn.
Okay.
No, you just did vest, but I'm done anyways.
Oh, you're done.
Well, I had other one. One other one is a game shears.
Yeah.
You know, that's a kind of an inexpensive one and a real easy one to find and helpful one when cleaning birds. I didn't own one for years. Just because I didn't think I need it, but it's so much easier to clean birds with a game shears.
Yeah, amen. A couple of others here. I believe the new pair of hunting boots will make any man happy.
Yes.
Because if you're like me, I go through a lot of boots. I feel like I'm constantly trying out a new pair of boots. So this year, going to try the Thorogood boots. I've heard a lot of really good things about them. But I've had Irish setters for years as well, and they've been a good hunting boot. I think depending on your terrain, obviously, it's important.
Right.
If you're going to tell somebody you want a pair of boots, maybe send them a direct link to something that you like. Because some of my Irish setters I wouldn't take into the mountain terrain.
Right.
You want more of a hiker's kind of boot for that to really grip the rocky stuff. But a new pair of boots is a great gift idea. You know, Onyx is a partner of ours. They have two different levels. You could do just a standard membership for a state that you want to hunt a lot. But if you're going to travel, the elite membership would be a great gift idea for somebody because that gives them access to all the states, every layer, everything that Onyx provides.
Right.
And they've got new features coming out that we'll probably talk about on this show coming up. But I've been talking with some of the techs there and some really exciting features. Hey, easy over there. That are geared to upland hunters and will definitely be a useful planning tool for trips out of town. We'll just say that. Last one I threw on my list. I just saw Sage and Breaker has a gun cleaning kit that they have put together for Father's Day. It's a Father's Day bundle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so in the kit, there's the gun cleaning mat. They've got their CLP gun cleaner. There's a gun parts tray, brush and pick tools, cleaning swabs, cleaning cloth, more. Everything rolls up kind of into a bundle. So you can take that with on your hunting trips.
On the road.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we talked about you spend all this money on all of our pastimes, you know, the dogs, the trip, the travel, everything. But sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people just forget about cleaning their guns. Mm-hmm. And I think if you had a nice gun cleaning kit that you could take easily with you, you probably would be more likely to want to throw that in and do it after the hunt.
So, well, and you make such a good point, Travis. There's nothing more disappointing or frustrating than when you plan a hunting trip and you take the time off to do it, spend the money, and you go out there and you either have an equipment malfunction or an issue with your dog. And you know, that maybe could have been avoided in the field had you had a stapler or EMT gel or something like that. And mm-hmm. so these are all... Boy, you really did your homework. I'm impressed.
I am a producer, Scott.
Yeah, you are in many ways. You're a producer, Travis.
Yes,
in many ways.
A producer. Well, I also produced last week some meat for my family. So let's transition.
Where'd you buy it?
Right? Organic, 100%. I'm running low. I actually was telling my wife I wish I would have shot a lot more last year. So this year, I'm going to try to get more deer, more birds, because my freezer is really low. But I shot a turkey at the end of Minnesota season last year, or a couple weeks ago. And so I made turkey jerky, but I also wanted to test out some jerky with pheasants, which I haven't done. So I take that back. I've made some jerky before, but I got this spice seasoning from Walton's. Here we go back to Walton's again. But it's called the, what do I call it? It's a pepper and garlic jerky.
Numb.
So it's already ready to go. And my kids love jerky. So I like preparing game in many different ways, but they're just, my boys and my daughter, little meat eaters, and they're obsessed with jerky right now. So I was like, all right, let's do this. The pepper and garlic jerky comes ready to go, and it tells you right in the package. That's the nice thing, what to do, the steps. So I prepared that, put some of the meat in that, and I let it sit. And then the other one is, of course, I think I shared with you that recipe.
Yes.
They love that one too. But there I have to go to the store and get all of the different ingredients. But either way, I will say that it gets an A++ from my family.
Awesome. Well, then that's
recipe.
A high recommendation.
Yeah, it is. And so because they've gotten to try a lot of different meats, and I'm like a lot of the listeners here that are always experimenting too. I've had friends share. You've shared some of your recipes mm-hmm. with me before for different wild game, but it's always fun. It's always
yes.
the fun part,
especially when your family enjoys it.
Yeah, exactly.
For a few years, I had to tell the girls everything was chicken.
Yeah.
And then they realized it wasn't all chicken and they were okay with that.
The only complaint that I have from my wife about the whole wild game lifestyle that we have is that when we're sitting down at the table, the boys want to hear the story of how it went down. She's like, can we not talk about how you killed what I'm eating right now, please, for one night? And I was like,
we'll talk about it in the garage after
yes,
dinner.
Exactly. Plus, you know, my 6-year-old, when he shot his turkey. So
It
was all part of the process, and he wanted to make the jerky. So anyway, two thumbs up for the pepper and garlic jerky seasoning. What's the brand on it?
Caller, please hold.
Yeah, please hold. Tap dance for me, Scott. Tap dance.
Tap dance. Okay. Well, you want me to share one of mine?
Oh, it's Excalibur.
Excalibur.
Excalibur okay. blend or Excalibur blend recipe, and you just buy that right on the Walton site. So I did that, and I smoked it at about 160 degrees, right around 2 to 2.5 hours on the smoker, and you can leave it longer depending on how you like the consistency. My wife likes it really dry and, you know,
so like breaks off.
And I kind of like a little bit of a chew.
Little
so
chew.
We meet in the middle. My kids don't care. They just hammer it. Do you have a recipe that you can share?
Yeah, I'm not going to actually share the one I shared with you yesterday, because I'll do a twist on an old standby. At least I think it's an old standby, which is jalapeno cream cheese with your pheasants. So mm-hmm. there's a couple different ways in bacon. You know, anytime you have bacon, you can't go wrong, right?
Yeah.
There's a couple ways I do this, and one is taking my pheasant breast and cutting them into bite-sized chunks, and then adding in the jalapeno cream cheese, mm-hmm. wrapping it with toothpick, and grilling it. And I do that one, and I'll do that with sharptail, ducks, dark meat, and mix them together, and I'll bring them as an appetizer to a party where I know people are not hunters, and just tell them it's mostly pheasant, and get a nice
chicken.
But I spice it that with garlic powder, pepper, sometimes a little thyme or a Montreal steak seasoning or something like that, and that's always a hit and an easy one to do. It's a little putsy, but it's easy. So the twist on that is take your breast and pound it and break it down and then flatten it out, and you can use, and then wrap it in the jalapeno and or I've used green pepper too, and you can use bigger pieces and serve it as a meal that way. I think we've done that before.
Yeah, we did that up in Ontario, actually.
Right. The and pounding makes
the
a big difference.
Yes,
it breaks down, you know, those veins and things like that, and it's so good. And I've done that for dinner guests, and they really enjoyed it too. And it's just a little bit different twist on it.
Yeah. And I agree wholeheartedly. I've had so many non-hunters come over, and I've made a similar, the wrap out of it. And yeah, when you tenderize the meat, and I've done that with goose even. That is actually good, where people, that, you know, sky carp, they call them, you know, and they just don't think you can make a good goose, but you can.
You can.
And I think a lot of it is the tenderizing. Taking care of it. Obviously, with any wild game, don't overcook it.
Yep.
Number one rule.
Don't overcook it. And the bacon helps with that when you wrap it, you know, to keep it moist.
Moisture.
And it's bacon.
Yep.
It's bacon.
Yep. You cannot go wrong with a wrap.
Sometimes I just throw cardboard in there to see if people still like it as much.
The poppers work. Well, Scott, the dogs are officially tired out. They're now both laying down. Spent. Puppy love is over. I think we'll wrap this up right now. Appreciate you taking some time today to catch us up. I'm excited for the new season. We hope everyone else is too. Once again, thank you to our sponsors, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, North Dakota Tourism, and Chief Upland Best for helping us to make this show possible. Be sure to download the Onyx Hunt app before your next hunting adventure to find out why it's one of the most valuable hunting tools available today. Check out the all-new, fully customizable Chief Upland Best for your next hunt. They're built for your pursuit. If you need a bird hunting fix right now, you can watch all of our episodes of the Flush television show available in their entirety. Binge watch them so you're ready for the new season coming out June 28th on the Outdoor Channel. If you have any guest ideas, show ideas for this podcast or our television show, please send them our way. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at The Flush TV or on our website at theflush.tv. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.